Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore, where our mission is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Welcome back, podcast listeners. Andrew here, and with me, as always, is our fearless leader, Dr. Tim Elmore. How are you, Tim?
Well, I'm not so fearless today. But,
no? But a couple of small fears.
That's right, small fears. But I tell you what, I'm liking this conversation we're going to have today. I think it's going to be really relevant and helpful to listeners.
I think so. And we've gone with a provocative title, too. Mm-hmm. We don't actually want our kids to be happy. I've got a few things to say about that. I'm sure
you do, too. Yep. So let me set it up, if you don't mind, Andrew.
Yeah.
I love the story that now has gotten around. In 1990, Elizabeth Newton performed her PhD project at Stanford University, and she called it Tappers and Listeners.
Okay.
Yeah. So this was in the book Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath, and they tell it so well. I'm going to try to retell it now. It was a simple exercise that Elizabeth decided to do where a group of individuals was divided into two teams. One were the tappers, and the other were the listeners, okay? The tappers' job was to choose a song that they felt like everybody would know.
Okay.
And then they would tap it out, like I'm going to do right now, okay, on the table,
okay.
Just finger on the table. And then the listener's job was to try to guess what song it was.
Okay.
What made it interesting, though, is the tappers were asked, how often do you think the listeners are going to guess it right? And they thought, oh, I'm so good at this. They're going to get this song, you know? And so they predicted of the 120 songs that were tapped out, they predicted about half the time, you know, they're going to guess it right.
Yeah. I'm a great tapper after
That's
all.
Right. And I know they're good listeners.
Yeah.
Well, in reality, the listener's job was quite difficult. Out of the 120 songs that were tapped out on Newton's experiment, only three were guessed correctly.
Three.
That's 2.5%. Not a very good score.
That's a bad score.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So here's what made the experiment newsworthy. They had guessed they would tap it out right because you can hear the song when you're tapping it.
Yeah.
If you're doing Happy Birthday to You, you're tapping. You're hearing the song
thinking,
when you're.
Of course they know what
right.
I'm doing.
And they can't hear your song.
Yeah.
Here's my point. Listeners, you're communicating to students, to your own kids, to student athletes, young people everywhere. And you think your message is clear.
Yeah.
Certainly they're hearing the same thing I'm hearing.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
In fact, very often, it's about the same percentage. We're teaching at a classroom, and 2.5% are going, I get it. And the other 97.5% are going, I have no idea what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I think, Andrew, that's especially happening with what we think we're saying to our kids about their own happiness.
Yes.
And what they're actually thinking we're saying as we talk.
I couldn't agree more. We've got the tune in our heads. And so we think that the comments that we're making are contextualized to them the way they're contextualized to us, right?
That's right.
I tell my kids something, but they know what I really mean, right?
Yeah.
But that's not always what happens.
Yeah. So listeners, today we're talking about the differences between the messages we send and the message our students receive.
Yes.
And Andrew, I want to turn the tables here, okay?
Okay?
If you don't mind.
Let's do it.
I'd like to interview you. You wrote some stuff. You actually did some digging on some research on this. So let me toss some questions to you, and I'd love for you to share what you learned. So start us off with the fascinating research that you picked up recently.
Yeah, so it was in 2014 they did a research project, and when I came across this, it sort of set the stage for this conversation. It was a fascinating report from the Harvard Graduation School of Educations. They have an area that they call the Making Caring Common Project.
Yeah.
And it revealed in their report that they released a startling contrast between the message that parents and educators intend to send to kids and the one that's actually getting through. So the report was actually entitled The Children We Mean to Raise, which is quite provocative in and of itself. It's the real message adults are sending to students about values.
Interesting.
So they surveyed over 10,000 middle and high school age students about what was most important to them. And they asked about three different things: achieving at a high level, happiness, which is they defined as feeling good most of the time, or third, caring for others. The results were striking. almost 80% of the youth picked one of the first two, either high achievement or happiness as their top choice. 80%.
I could see when I think about the parents and teachers I know, I want you to be happy. I want my kids to be happy, you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, achieve. But I can see how they would garner that. Now, keep talking, because I know you're about to reveal what we thought we were saying.
And, of course, this implies that those students said only about 20% said the real goal is caring for others.
Yeah.
One student that they quoted in the study, I think, summed up the student's opinion quite well. Here's what they said. If you're not happy, life is nothing. Mm. After that, you want to do well. And then after that, you can expend any excess energy on others.
How about that?
Isn't that quite telling? Mm-hmm. So what's most striking to me, though, about this kind of blatantly self-focused perspective in our students is where they actually got this idea from. Mm-hmm. In a similar survey of adults over the same time frame, they found that most parents and teachers say that developing caring children is their top priority and rank it as more important than their children's achievements. So parents are saying exactly the opposite.
Yeah. The kids are picking up one message by what they see as well as hear.
I agree.
And we think we're doing it all right.
Absolutely. Yeah. So about 80%, this is a quote from that study. They said about 80% of the youth in our survey report that their parents are more concerned about their own achievement or happiness than whether or not they care for others. A similar percentage of youth perceive their teachers as prioritizing students' achievements over their caring. Youth were also 3 times more likely to agree than disagree with this statement. My parents are prouder if I get good grades in my classes than if I'm a caring community member in class and school.
Wow. Interesting.
So very interesting, because it just leaves us with this question of what happened here?
Yeah.
How is it possible that students would say this is most important? And not only this is most important, but I also perceive that my parents and my teachers think this is most important. But when you ask parents and teachers what's most important, they say the exact opposite. I think we could probably all infer about what's going on here. But
I want you to be blunt on this one, though. Talk about what you make of this. When you look at the results and you think about the whys, talk about what you see.
Well, think about it. You get a parent, you pull them aside, and you sit down with them and you ask them a question. What do you think is the most important thing a kid needs to learn? Is it high achievement? Is it happiness? Or is it caring for others? Well, of course they're going to say, right? It's about caring for others.
Yeah, there's only one right answer
Yeah. Exactly. And when you ask their students what their parents and teachers really care about, what they go back to is what they've heard those folks talk about.
Yeah.
Which is, did you get good grades?
Yeah.
Are you happy? What can I get you? All those kinds of things. And they realize that the number of conversations we're having about happiness or success far outnumber, I think, the conversations that are being had about, are we a caring member of our community?
Yeah.
So which answer is it? It's the one we're practicing.
Yep.
It's the one we're embodying. That's actually the message that's getting tapped out and listened to from our kids.
People do what people see.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
our lectures are great, we think.
Yes.
But it's not coming through very loud and clear.
And so to me, I think the thing that's perhaps most ironic about this is the farther our students are into this world, there's actually this really interesting phenomenon of them not even getting to the results that we're pushing for. So there was a really fascinating research from Sunia Luthar, and here's what she said. Children from affluent communities who are subjected to intense achievement pressure by their parents don't actually appear to outperform other students.
Huh.
Instead of success or happiness, I think the most common traits these happiness-chasing students share today are actually stress and loneliness.
Oh, my gosh.
Those are the things they actually feel from doing all of this chasing of happiness and success.
Yeah.
I think we've got to ask this question. Is it possible that in making the happiness the main thing we talk about and our main goal, that we've actually made a mistake and done the exact opposite of what we meant to? And I think the answer is
absolutely.
Yes.
Sure. I did a book, you remember, a number of years ago called 12 Huge Mistakes Parents Can Avoid.
Yes.
And one of them is we prioritize being happy. Whether we're saying that's a priority or not, I want my kids to be happy. But when happiness becomes a goal, it's elusive.
Yeah.
When it becomes a byproduct of caring and meaningful service, oh my gosh, it sneaks up on us.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, what's an even better goal then for kids than being happy? Yeah. What would you say?
Yeah, I think that it really comes down to our mindset, right? When we are thinking about happiness or success, which I really think we chase success because we think when our kids achieve that financial whatever that's going to come from it, they're going to be happy, right? So it's really a secondhand way of chasing success. I think when we chase those things, we're missing the point.
Yeah.
So I actually just finished a book called The Second Mountain, The Quest for a Moral Life. It's a book by David Brooks. He's a fantastic writer. He wrote The Road to Character, which I'm a big fan of that book as well. And he talks in his book about a bigger idea. Here's what he says. We think we want ease and comfort. And of course we do from time to time, but there's something inside of us that longs for some calling that requires dedication and sacrifice.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think he's really onto something here. A mindset shift that's going to help us. I think what Brooks means and what we all know intrinsically is that true life satisfaction does not come from rising above the little struggles and sacrifices in life, but rather from embracing them.
Yeah. Yeah.
From actually going, how do I make the most of this? A conversation you and I have talked about many times. When our kids embrace the challenges and struggles they face for the sake of something bigger, instead of happiness, I think they find another more helpful outcome, which is joy.
Yes. Looks like happiness, but it's different.
Feels totally different.
Yeah.
And I actually think if parents were to think about joy as the outcome they were aiming for their kids, rather than happiness, that they would have a much better experience, or our kids would.
Can you differentiate those two? So happiness results from something, but joy results from something different, even though they look alike maybe in the end.
Yeah. I think happiness results from achievement or pleasure, which is
why
we often call happiness fleeting, right?
Yeah.
Because I achieved this thing that I was going for, and I feel really great about it, but it kind of goes away pretty quickly. And so I've got to go find another achievement or another pleasure in order to bring that happiness back. But joy comes from somewhere else. I would say joy comes from, and David Brooks writes about this as well, joy comes from meaning and purpose.
Interesting.
I'm doing something that feels meaningful. And so I experience this intrinsic, almost existential feeling of satisfaction, right?
Yeah.
I would say people who are experiencing joy are not always experiencing happiness.
Yeah.
But they know, as people of joy, that happiness comes and goes.
Yeah.
Joy is consistent as long as I'm chasing things that are meaningful or full of purpose for me. Because these people center themselves around a higher purpose, people with joy are not as vulnerable to life's little obstacles that come along. Small things like failed math tests and athletic injuries, or really big ones like the loss of a loved one. People with joy can kind of survive those losses, no matter what degree they are. A student's access to meaning and purpose can give them an unshakable steadiness. And that's why joy, I think, is such a better goal than happiness.
You can have it wherever you are. It's not the byproduct of having everything wonderful going on in your life. It's not external. It's internal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm thinking right now, we don't see too many students embodying this.
Yeah.
Not their fault, but we didn't teach it well.
Yeah.
So I'd love for all 59 million Gen Zers in America to be doing this.
Yeah, me too.
Why do you think it is we don't see kids doing this?
If you look at the way we're doing education and the way we're raising kids, it really has shifted to focus on numbers, right? So it is how well is your GPA doing? What about graduation rates?
Yeah.
What about
some
of these kind of numerical goals? And the reality is, a student chasing purpose and meaning, you can't really put that on a number scale. And so it doesn't often fit. And this is why we're seeing a decline in the number of students who feel like they have their own internal philosophy, their own core values.
Yeah.
In fact, there was a study in the book, The Path to Purpose by William Damon, and he found that only about 20% of young adults in the study he did have a fully realized sense of purpose.
Wow.
And that's self-reported,
right? Yes.
So only about one in five young adults, so this is kids who are in college and just out of college, would say, yeah, by 23 years old, I felt like I know what I'm supposed to be doing on Earth.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that so few kids are getting access to this, the fact that so many kids are being exposed to questions about their own happiness, their own success, is really kind of pointing us in a direction that, of course, is going to have some after effects.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, this all begs the $64,000 question. How do we help our students find really both purpose and joy that it brings?
Yeah.
So we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want you to talk about that very topic.
Growing up in a post-pandemic world means that many students today are facing new challenges and often don't have the social and emotional skills to handle it all. When students possess skills like self-awareness, impulse control, empathy, teamwork, and responsible decision-making, they're prepared to not only survive, but succeed inside and outside of the classroom. Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning comes in both middle school and high school versions and presents a fun, image-based pedagogy designed to delight and challenge your students. Find out more about how you can get Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning to your school by going to growingleaders.com/SEL.
All right, Andrew, we're back. Let's talk about how we can help our students really accomplish or achieve what you've just been talking about.
Yeah, so I want to just offer three suggestions. This is not an exhaustive list of all the ideas, right? You probably, as a listener right now, are thinking, okay, how would I make joy the goal for my kids rather than passion? I want to give you three ideas to get you started. You'll probably come up with more. So number one, I would say young people need opportunities to discover their passions. Now, there's a lot of talk about passion these days, but I want to redefine or really accurately define passion for us in a way that I think will help you realize why it's so closely tied with joy. As a high schooler, I remember watching my younger brother work at his love for music hours upon hours upon hours upon hours. He had headphones in and his guitar plugged into the headphones, and so he was playing even when it sounded like it was silent. And even back then, my younger brother, who was probably 10, 11, 12 at the time, found something that he was willing to give up his time and his resources to chase.
Yeah.
It's not surprising to me that he's still making music today. He's been in several bands. He's got things recorded and on streaming platforms. He's now in his 30s, but he's still chasing that same dream, because when you get, quote unquote, bitten by the bug of whatever it is, whether it's music or writing or any kind of practice, it's really, really hard to let go of. Do you know where the word passion comes from? I know you do, Tim, but many of our listeners may not. The root of passion actually means to suffer.
Yeah.
When oftentimes when we talk to kids, what are you passionate about? We ask them, what do you really like? That's not really what we're asking them. When we say the word to suffer or passion, what we're really hinting at is, what is it that you care so much about that you're willing to make sacrifices to achieve it? And I think young people need opportunities, even early on, to discover things that they're willing to make sacrifices for, willing to spend their time, willing to spend their resources, all of that, simply because they love this thing. And it doesn't have to be music. It doesn't have to really be anything specific. But I think chasing passion, making sacrifices, and discovering things that bring you joy is one aspect of this conversation. So what opportunities are you giving your kids to help them find out what they really, really love?
Yeah, good. Let's hear a second idea.
So the second idea is, I think young people need us, their parents, leaders, and mentors, to begin to help recognize their joy. I have this friend who said to me just a couple of months ago, he said, the only thing rarer than genius is the ability to recognize it. And I love that quote, because it is exactly right. How many times have you been around somebody and you're like, wow, man, you are so great at that. And they go, what the heck are you talking about? I'm not good at that. We have a really high ability to be talented in something or passionate about something or gifted in something. Mm-hmm. But we often miss that self-awareness that allows us to recognize it. When a young person finds a passion or purpose, it's doubtful, honestly, that they'll also realize what they have discovered. I think they need adults who call out the joy they experience and encourage them to chase it. So as you're watching the students that you're leading today, ask yourself questions like, what activities are most likely to bring a smile to their face? What things do they do that they could spend hours working on this thing without even really realizing it? And what things might be unlocked if they continue to chase that goal? So one is give them experiences and opportunities to discover joy. Two is recognize for them when joy is occurring and let them know something special is going on here. I have enjoyed, as I've mentored various people over the last several years, of just coming to people and going, do you know, something changed about you when I gave you that assignment, or something changed about you when we got to that experience. I think this might be an area of strength or passion or joy for you, and helping them kind of recognize that is huge.
I actually think most people need someone else to spot it.
Yeah.
We're not good at seeing what's in us.
Yeah.
So good. All right. That's two good ideas. There's a third one. Go for it.
Yeah. I think thirdly, it's the issue that we began with in our podcast today. Young leaders need us to model and communicate in a better way. We've got to stop talking so much about happiness, and we need to start talking about something else. As we saw in those surveys, most adults believe one thing about success, but actually inadvertently teach their kids something else about it. If you're one of those adults who genuinely desires your child or your student's joy over their happiness, you've got to embody that belief. You've got to embody that belief. So what could it look like? Maybe you could let them chase goals that are unlikely to bring financial success, right? Maybe they got some idea about, hey, I'd really love to become a really good pole vaulter, you know, and you're like, there is no money to be made chasing that goal, you know. Maybe you'll get to the Olympics if you're really, really, really good, but there's no long-term strategy, right? It's not the same as a business degree.
Yeah.
But if they find something that's bringing them joy, as long as it's appropriate, I would say encourage them to step into that, even if it may not bring them financial success. I would also say that we need to find ways to model personal sacrifice and even talk about it with our kids.
Yeah.
That's another big one. If you, as an adult, have your own passions, your own things that you say, I'm not making a lot of money doing this, but it really, really brings a lot of joy and meaning and purpose to me, talk about that with the students that you're leading. I also would say we've got to discover more ways not just to celebrate straight A's and, you know, kids who are at the top of their class and GPAs and all that stuff. We need to find ways to also celebrate kindness, generosity, positive attitude, and then effort. And there are many places where this is happening, but I would say we got to do this more often. We at least have to balance it with our celebration of test scores and sports stats, right? It's not that one is terrible and the other one's good. It's just we need to be in, I think, a little bit more balance. Because if we were balanced in our celebration of these things, then we would send the correct message to our
kids. You're right. Absolutely. So I want to tie a ribbon around this. Or rather, I'd like you to tie ribbon around this. These are three really practical ideas you just shared.
Yeah.
There's a simple way to clarify, I think, the difference between happiness and joy.
Yeah.
Can you put that in a summary?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can see it in the data, and it's definitely laced throughout the conversation we have. But here's a short way of saying this. Chasing happiness will tend to bring short-term gain, meaning I feel really great right now, but it's probably going to bring long-term pain.
Yeah.
Because happiness is not a successful goal to chase. Chasing joy, however, might bring short-term pain.
That's right.
As in, man, I've got to practice extra for this goal that I'm working towards.
Make sacrifices.
Make sacrifices for this goal. But it's likely to bring long-term gain.
Yeah.
And if we could realize that and help our kids kind of wrestle through the joy, the pain that can often come with chasing joy in the interim, we're going to see them experience much more probably happiness and success in its true form in the long run.
I think so. In fact, my adult children, even now, I feel like we need to continue to have conversations because they aspire to some of the things mom and dad have, but we're 30 years ahead of them.
Yeah.
But it always boils down to either play now and pay later, or pay now and play later.
That's so good.
And we want to play now.
Yes.
You know?
Of course we
unfortunately,
do.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yes, of course
so we this do. Has been so rich. And you know, Andrew, I got to be honest with you. It reminds me of a statement that Helen Keller made.
Yeah.
Helen Keller is quite infamous now. First of all, as the only person that I know of in history that was deaf, dumb, and blind and graduated from a university,
amazing.
From a college.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she grew up, you know, this person that was terribly disabled.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Some
to
people
say.
Might look at her and go, how in the world could she ever be happy?
Yeah.
She's missing so much.
Yeah. But what she said after her graduation from college says it all. She said, and I quote, A happy life consists not in the absence, but in the mastery of hardships. We only do that by having a very strong sense of purpose. And that's exactly what you've talked about
today. I love that quote. Yeah. I love that quote. Well, thank you so much, listeners, for diving in. I hope this has been challenging for you and helps you kind of think about this subject a different way, and maybe even puts a few tools in your tool belt as you're thinking about, how do I help my students begin to think differently about the goal of life or where we're pushing them towards? Make sure that you're sending the same message that you intend to send. That's the real big challenge here. If you're looking for a resource to help you begin to think even deeper than we've gone today about what is really our goal for our kids as we're leading them, I got to write a really amazing book. At least I feel really great about it. It's called Ready for Real Life, Unpacking the 5 Essential Soft Skills That All Great Leaders Instill in Their Students. If you want to find out more about the book Ready for Real Life, head on over to readyforreallifebook.com. That's readyforreallifebook.com. Pick up a copy. I think if you enjoyed today's conversation, you're going to enjoy that book as well. Well, as always, if you would rate this podcast, give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, we would greatly appreciate it. If you found this particularly helpful and thought of somebody who might enjoy it, please share it with them. We would also appreciate that. If you want to connect with us online, we are at Growing Leaders and at Tim Elmore, pretty much everywhere you are. And then finally, if you have ideas for this podcast, subjects you think we should cover, people we should interview, shoot us an email. It's podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting those from you. Well, thank you so much, listeners, for engaging with us today. Think about students' joy over their happiness, and I hope that you have a great rest of your week. We'll see you next time.